If you are ready for an amazing transformational experience, then you need to stay tuned for this next hour for a Master's Practice with Dr. Aisha Hogan. She is a leading specialist in holistic methodologies and the creator of a powerful integrative technique called Enhanced Energy Communication, a master clinical and metaphysical hypnotherapist, a well-respected author, a master of the mind, and highly sought international speaker. Get ready for a major breakthrough. And now, your soul guru, holistic transformational specialist, and host of A Master's Practice, Dr. Aisha Hogan.
Hi, and welcome to a special series of A Master's Practice called Lighting Up the Devil. In this special series, we're going to take a close look at that devil, the devil on our shoulder, aka the ego, the inner critic, our inner negative voice. So for those of you that are just joining in, let me set the scene for you again. Imagine now that I went on a vacation to Turkey. And during this vacation, I took an excursion. And during that excursion, I found a box, inside which there was a heart-shaped talisman and a scroll. In reading the scroll, it became really evident that with this talisman, the devil has to speak to me and tell me the truth about whatever I ask. So with this talisman, basically, I have some power over the devil. In the last episode, we came to understand some basic and interesting information about the devil. And now, let me share with you that my guest today, once again, is the devil, who asked me in the last episode that I must address her as my queen. So, good day, my queen, and how are you today?
Well, I'm fabulous. Thank you for asking, and this is great. I'm glad you're on track today with the appropriate address to myself. I really appreciate that, so thank you. I'm not super thrilled to be back, but this talisman binds me to do so. So I guess get on with your questions. I'd like to go about my day.
All right then. So in the last episode, we talked a lot about fears, all of the top fears that you use to run humanity, basically, and that you have control over 98% of humanity on this planet. So that's super interesting, and a higher number than I would like to admit is true, but I guess that is the case. So today I'd like to ask you about what other tools you use. So you use fear, but what other tools do you use to gain control over this 98% of humanity?
Well, it depends, of course, on the individual. I mean, I use a lot of different tools and tactics, but it's about what works best to not only gain control, but also maintain that control with each person. So you're right, we touched on fear a lot. You seem to be still a little surprised about this 98%, but maybe I can help to break that down for you.
All right.
Because another tool I use is this concept of drifting.
Drifting. So when you mean when people are not really focused on their, when they're not focused.
In its essence, yeah, I suppose you could say without focus, this idea that someone maybe has a lot of ideas. You know, the human mind is fascinating. You all have a lot of things going on in there all the time. But that spirit to get up and do it, well, that's a whole other thing. That takes hard work. That takes something else. And very few people have that tenacity to do so. So this concept of drifting is that you can have all the ideas that you like, but if you're not focused in what you want to do or accomplish, well, you just kind of go through life rather complacent. And I just keep control. It's easier to put my thoughts into your mind than your own.
So basically what you're saying is that I like it to call it, I don't know, I have a word for it, and I like to call it the squirrel mind that kind of bounces off the walls, and it's here, and it's there, and it's not focusing on anything, and, you know, they finish at the end of the day. A person can finish the end of the day thinking, like, I didn't get anything done today, but meanwhile, they had this busyness going on. They're busy being busy doing nothing. So are you saying that these people, that you take advantage of the fact that they're not thinking for themselves?
In some ways, yeah. I mean, you described it as this busy bee, but I like to think of it more as a shell. And I think you know some people like this if you think about it, where, yeah, they might be at work at 9 o'clock and they punch out at 5, and really they've, you know, done really nothing at work or whatever it is. They've accomplished whatever tasks were set out in front of them, but they don't really feel fulfilled. So in that time of doing whatever monotonous task they're doing because they're not engaged in it or not really in it to win it type of thing, they can think about all sorts of things. And that's when I can bring fear back up or implant other ideas about what they should be doing with their lives, and they feel sorry for themselves, or the list goes on.
But what about these people, like, now you just said that, and now that's just bringing up a question for me. What about these people who are, like, out there, they're working, they want to achieve something in their job, and they will do anything to anyone to get there? So it's a strange thing. It's a strange, like, I'm sitting here as I'm asking this question, and I'm thinking about it. I mean, you think about these people who, I don't know, they're working in a high power position. They maybe stepped on some heads to get there. And do they really love what they do? I mean, this is a question that I'm asking, I guess, rhetorically now. Because they are focused. They are focused in winning. They're focused in achieving.
Well, yeah, I think there's two parts to that. Because while they seem focused, are they really winning? And that's where I come in, too. They stepped on a few heads, as you said, to get where they are. For sure. And, you know, you've got to do what you've got to do. But did those people, you know, miss out? Perhaps that was me at work, too. And it didn't matter what happened to those people to get them to this higher level. But they got there. But now that they're at that higher level, are they really achieving what they want? Or is it, oh, just one more year and I can really do what I want? Or just this much more money and I can do what I really want. They think they're achieving because they're working towards whatever goal they have at their sights on, but maybe they're just functioning at a higher level than others. Drifting doesn't have to be the sloppy couch potato, I have no direction in my life. Drifting takes all sorts of different forms.
Okay. So a lot of people that I work with, they're that, I'm not going to say the couch potato, but they've been letting life, you know, give them lemons, so to speak. They've been not taking control of their life. They've been a little mentally lazy. And I use that word loosely because I think that I don't mean lazy as a judgment. I mean it like they just haven't taken responsibility yet for their own health. So I'm going to ask you again, and I know I touched on this a little bit in the last episode again, but at what point are you taking control of a human?
And I think I answered that it can start, you know, right away, really, from right in the womb. I can start to plant ideas of doubt and what one should be thinking and what one should be doing right in the womb or from infancy. I have lots of helpers that support this mission of mine as an infant becomes a child and then progresses into life. But there's always people that are going to be helping me spread my work and my word throughout life.
So in the womb, I mean, this child is not creating thoughts yet. Not in the sense of, you know, beta mind, consciousness, creating thoughts yet. So how are you creating doubt in there? Is this kind of where, like, the word that's coming up into my mind right now is, like, ancestral healing. You know, when we deal with people's healing, sometimes they created or achieves or somehow integrated some bad behaviors or behaviors of their ancestors. I mean, is that you too? Or is that something that's just in their genetic code?
Well, of course it's me. I do it all. You know, I don't just stop at the mundane one person to person. I'm a big picture thinker, you know, been around for a long time. But in terms of implanting these ideas when they're in the womb, that happens, yes, through this ancestral, you know, mind and consciousness, but also through the mother and the energy and thoughts going around her. I mean, if the mother who's carrying a child eats only peanut butter for the time she's pregnant, chances are that baby's going to be allergic to peanuts. It's the same thing with negative thoughts. If people are telling this mother what she should and should not do, or casting doubt and shame for whatever reason as to why she's pregnant, or telling her how she should raise her child and what she should do and all of this around her, that affects the fetus. Absolutely.
So it could also be things like if the mother herself is going through a lot of stress and tension in her own life, like if she's making, let's say if she's in an abusive relationship or she's in a relationship that's not ideal. Now, I know the child gets the mother's nourishment, and I already know the answer to this particular question, but I would like to talk about it. So you're saying that the child is also picking up on mom's energy?
Absolutely. Well, they're linked. They're in every way, they're linked.
All right. So now I want to really, really get into these helping others. You've talked about these people a lot. These people that help you, are they like little mini devils running around, or like, you know, is this like a team you've got going on? Like, who are you talking about?
Like, do we have matching tattoos and something and that like kind that. Of thing? Well, no. I mean, certainly it's a popular choice for many folks, and I'm very honored when someone gets that and whatnot. But no, we don't have matching costumes or hats or whatever, you know, you might be thinking. But I do have a lot of helpers, and that makes my job pretty easy because they're already bought into what I'm selling. And these helpers come in many different forms, whether they're parents telling a child how to think and what to do and how to act immediately when the child enters this world, to teachers, to religious leaders, to political leaders. The list goes on, but there's always someone going to be selling what I have.
So wait a minute. A parent, you know, generally speaking, a parent brings this child into the world to care for and to teach them and to guide them in the right way. I'm not like living under a rock. So I do get that, you know, a lot of parents, I mean, most families are dysfunctional. That's kind of the norm, unfortunately. That is the norm right this time. So you're saying that you use the parents who love these children against them?
Well, sure. And it can be done with what you think is love. Absolutely. But the child that is still spoon-fed until he's 12 years old, do you really think that's helping that child in life? All that's teaching that child is that things will come to you and life will be easy. And therefore, he's or she is already bought in to the mission of mine moving forward. They'll expect the easy path and take it when I tempt them. It's quite effective. It's wonderful. Parents saying that you should do this or do that, but not encouraging any independent thought, how will that child move from adolescence to adulthood and be able to think for themselves as well? They can't.
So, I mean, the parent that's not the best parent is easy to see what they're doing wrong. But you're saying even the parent who is what we would classify as a good mom or a good dad, a good parent, is also working for you?
It depends. I don't think that they are intentionally thinking, of course, that this is my work. No one ever does, and that's why it's so beautiful and effective. But yes, in moments where a parent loses control, for example, if a child throws perhaps a fit and a parent loses it in whatever way, you know, you want to imagine, for sure that's me. They've just given in to a whole flurry of emotion, but not impacted their child in a good way. Well, that's not necessarily done thinking that, oh, we're going to really be, you know, angry and stern for the child. But it still happens because you're human.
And also, I guess, because they've got some learned behaviors from their own parents. You know, you've got me thinking about my own upbringing and things that were said and done and interesting. So parents play a big part. Because I guess, you know, that child at the beginning stages of their life are just sponges and taking in everything that's being said or done around them. Which leads me to, before I get into some of these other ones you talked about, which leads me to, and I'm just going to sort of introduce this topic right now and we're going to get into it more, but even like the stuff these kids are watching on TV.
Well, sure, media is a huge helper. Absolutely. I mean, anything from dramatic violence and thinking that that's just fine to do, a basic concept, to how you should be living your life and the possessions that you should have, to you can do whatever you want because you're an individual and just live up your life in whatever way without any thought for others or whatnot. That's all me too.
But even the cartoons now, when I think about the cartoons, how they've changed from when we were kids to now, where they were fun and maybe there might have been a good lesson in them, where now it's all about, I don't know, I look at them and they look like movies of shoot 'em up type of movies, and they're not those fun, easygoing cartoons anymore, which is kind of a sad thing. So I want to get more into media for a second, but we're going to just move into a break. So we're going to go take a break now. Stay tuned for a special series of A Master's Practice, Lighting Up the Devil, with me, Dr. Aisha Hogan, and my queen, the devil.
Free your mind. Expand your soul. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. Om Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Have you bought into the idea that you have to work hard for your money, that business is hard? I will share some dynamic access consciousness tools to get you out of your own way so you can create a business that actually succeeds. Join me, Simone Millicers, on The Joy of Business at 4 p.m. Mondays Eastern.
Are you ready to live your life depression-free? Are you having thoughts of ending things? Wondering what life would be like without chronic pain? How about no longer suffering the effects of trauma and PTSD? Are you tired of having your credibility questioned because you look fine and no one understands that you are struggling with an invisible disorder? Hi, I'm Dr. Aisha Hogan and I'm a holistic transformation specialist. I work with clients from all over the world to aid them in eliminating, that's right, you heard me, eliminating their current struggles and challenges. I don't work with symptoms. That's like putting a band-aid on a gunshot wound. I'm all about root cause and all the levels of you, as each one of us is unique. Ready to transform your life for good, to move into the best version of yourself and reach your unlimited potential? Then book your complimentary 1-hour online consultation with me by going to www.aishahogan.com. That's AYSEHogan.com. And it will take you right to my clinic, the Chakra House of Healing. I look forward to meeting you there.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family. And then, boom,
Everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Lighting Up the Devil, a special series of A Master's Practice with me, Dr. Aisha Hogan, and my guest today, the Devil, also known as my Queen. So when we left for the break, you had said that parents are one of your helpers. And I feel like that's sad. That's sad and maddening at the same time, that every child has a parent at some point and or someone who is in charge of them. So the fact that they're already under your control and even their good intentions to raise this child properly is just feeding them crap about you. And not so much about you, but taking away their ability to think properly for themselves and giving them some self-limiting beliefs in themselves that they may not even be true. I'm trying to think of all the things that parents say. You know, you're not good enough. Why are you, calling their children names like stupid? You know, why are you so stupid? Why did you do it that way? And all of these different things that I guess we don't think about. Parents don't think about when they say.
Absolutely. And self-limiting really is the word to use. You've hit the nail on the head. Congratulations with that one. But self-limiting is, in essence, what it is. And it might not be intentional from the parent. This isn't to say, parents are always wrong and parents are bad. They're just working for me. It's nice for me. But every child at some point has been likely told that they're not good enough in some way, shape, or form. You should have achieved higher on that test. You're too fat. You're too skinny. You need to eat more. You need to eat less. You should have done this better. You didn't do this good enough. The list goes on. And as I'm sure you know, that language really stays with a child growing up. And then that human, that individual, then has the choice to either put that aside and work through it, or keep it with them for a long time. And luckily for me, most folks keep it with them. And that is how a child then goes through life into adolescence and adulthood, thinking that, you know what, they're probably not good enough to achieve that promotion or go on that trip, or they shouldn't do this or do that, or they have to be stuck where they currently are. Thus the drifting.
Okay. I was going to get into media, but I'm actually going to put that one aside for just a second. And let's just get back to that at the end. So who else? So if it's parents, I mean, who else?
Well, it's every figure in charge to a certain extent. So teachers, religious officials. Well, religious officials is a big one. Y'all think they're batting for, the other team? No. They batting for me.
What do you mean? Come on. A minister is a minister. I mean, they're talking about God and, and all of these wonderful things that we're supposed to be doing to stay in the light.
Absolutely. But in doing so, there is a long list of rules, and often shame. Shame is a big one that comes into play with religion. If you do something bad, well, not only do you have to be very sorry about it, but this feeling of shame then, and in doing so, fear is put, the other thing going on there. God will say, whatever it is, my opponent won't forgive them or won't let them into that big, beautiful place upstairs when they pass on, which is a load of crap, but, they have to use what they have. It's really fantastic.
But they do talk about you. Religious figures do talk about you. They talk about going to hell. They talk about this place that apparently doesn't exist based on our last conversation. But I guess you're right. I mean, they put the fear of people right away from a young, from when they start in these places, that there is a bad place to go. Always. And that if they're not baptized, they're going to this place. And if this isn't happening, that's going there. And are you saying that those places, I mean, for those who didn't listen in the first episode, are you saying those places don't exist? Are you saying those places don't exist?
I think it depends on what your own personal version of heaven or hell is. It all depends on the person. For, as we said in the first episode, hell for human A would look completely different for human B, as well as whatever concept of heaven is, I suppose, too, should they be fortunate enough to not end up, you know, with me for all eternity. But it just depends.
So, I mean, we all know, based on science and everything else, that there's no real fire and brimstone place, which I'm sure a lot of people that are listening to me, listening to this right now, I mean, this is some really... I mean, this is pretty edgy what we're talking about right now, because people put their whole lives into their religious leaders. And, you know, they believe in so much in their churches and stuff. And what you're saying here is that these people, unbeknownst to them, the religious leaders and stuff, without intending to, I guess, as the parents, are what? Helping them come to you?
Well, they're certainly not encouraging individual thought. They're saying, this is what you need to do, and either do it or else, hence the shame and the fear, and we're right back to me. I'm not saying that every religious leader out there is on my side. There are some, you know, really great ones out there. They're not great for me. I'm working on them. I might get them, but whatever. 98%, like, that's pretty darn great. So... But in the day-to-day, the thou shan't, thou shalt, whatever crap they're spouting in a sermon or in Bible study or whatever it is, yeah, it all leads back to me with this list and not encouraging independent thought.
Okay, so they're weakening their own ability to think for themselves. And I see where you're going with this. It's just a bunch of... I mean, I don't even want to say this word, but I'm trying to disassociate myself from all of what you're saying right now. I mean, and just put it into a different perspective, but it's almost like you're saying what? Like we're just like a bunch of sheep?
Can I give you an example?
Sure.
Great. So I was, you know, flipping through my various channels, we'll call them, because I can be everywhere at once. A few years ago, and I flipped through this, believe it or not, Bible camp. So parents elect to send their children here to be grown and developed with, you know, a spirit of God, and thinking it's very, you know, rich and welcoming, and it's going to be a good place because it's Christian camp. How could it not be? So the leaders of this camp are young adults, they're teenagers. They've been then told how to act and behave and whatnot, and they have a lesson plan, so to say. In one of these lesson plans, and the participants of the camp, they were about, let's say, 14 or so. So not quite of age. I don't think any of them had actually been intimate with another human before. But the message of this lesson, a leader who was about 16 or 17, took an orange and basically expressed that, you know, as you become intimate with someone, you open yourself up and aggressively peel the orange. And if you do this before you're married, in the eyes of God, you know, you'll tear yourself apart. And then she proceeded to tear apart the orange and throw it all around the room. This is very impactful for the participants. They're thinking, well, geez, if I do that, then I'm not going to get into heaven. I'm going to be real hooped, as it were. It ended with a message which I thought was hilarious, that if you gather up all the broken pieces and then spend a lot of time begging God to forgive you, they'll make you whole again, and you can still go about your day. So there were two messages for me in that shocking these young people into thinking that they have to do things a certain way with their life or else they're just hooped moving forward, but also that you can still gather up your crap after and ask for forgiveness and basically move on. It was fascinating to watch the minds at work there.
Okay, well, wow. So that camp, and it's a good illustration. And I guess, but they can. I mean, people can make a lot of mistakes in their lives and take responsibility for those mistakes and get, not that they ever lose their connection to Source, but they can reconnect, like really feel their connection once again. Even, I mean, that could happen for the worst criminal. That could happen for anyone. Once they realize what they've done is wrong and come into some sort of realization and take responsibility for themselves, they can then bring themselves into a place of light away from you.
You're absolutely right. And I'm not here to say you're wrong. I'm smiling because do you think that's easy for the person who has had their life spent by others telling them what is good and bad and what they should or should not do? You're absolutely right that even like the lowest human could then reconnect with this source, as you say. But it's certainly not easy. And I'm not going to make it any easier.
It's not easy. I mean, I know that in my practice. You know, I'm trying to make people the expert of their own purpose and move them using their story and their past and their life lessons to bring them into a place of where they have more clarity in their life and they're attached to their own superpower and they find their purpose. And, you know, that's what I'm doing with people. But and some of their pasts are horrible. But I guess the question that, I don't even know if it's a question. We talked about it in the last episode. Part of the journey, I truly believe part of the journey of our healing, of our moving to the next level, whatever that is, or transcending, is about overcoming you. And we talked about how spirit, soul, that energy in our body is quiet, where you are so loud all the time. And I was questioning that when it sort of came to me that you're loud because we have to overcome you. We have to get past you. And that's not an easy thing to do. But then what in this life is worth doing that's easy? Because easy means you.
Well, that's not my fault.
No, not your fault. Now, also, you mentioned teachers. And I see where you're going to go with this, but I'm going to ask you to explain it anyways. So, teachers. Teachers are there to what? They come in, they teach them math, they teach them spelling, they teach them how to create stories and how to be creative. And so, why teachers?
Some teachers, yes, the word creative, for sure. Some, just like religious leaders, some are great. They're certainly not part of my team, not at all. Others, though, it's just about this is what you'll do and this is what you won't do. And it's about encouraging that complacent thought that if you do this much, this is what you'll receive. If you'll do this much, this is what you'll receive. There is no, not necessarily overachieving, but there's no room for independent thought.
So basically all these others, the parents, the teachers, the religious leaders that you have working for you, which is 98% of them, of the population of them, are there to undermine the ability of children and their courage to think for themselves. And to teach them to fear you, in some sense, fear something bad happening to them. And I guess at that point, they just become weak, right? I mean, they become weak because no one's teaching them to think. No one's teaching them that it's okay for them to be different. And I come back to this idea of sheep, right? Where how many leaders are there and how many followers are there? And if you're also taking, like, I mean, you're even controlling a lot of our leaders.
Yeah. It's great. Sheep, for sure. Think back to when you were in school. Was it cool to be different? Were you rewarded for being different? Maybe you were with a grade, but then you certainly wouldn't be by your peers.
No. Being different was... Well, I mean, I was very different. I came from a different country. I had a different name, not like everybody else, and spoke a different language. And my parents moved a lot. So it was always trying to rebuild new relationships. So no, not easy. But I guess I was fortunate in one way. And that was, you know, maybe that's something that parents need to know. No matter how much there was some dysfunction in my world, my father was very much about, don't be a follower, always be a leader. Don't worry that you're different than everybody else. And that was a good message, because that's something that I've carried with me for all of my life. So yes, it's okay to be different. It's okay not to be like everybody else. It's okay to think for yourself. It's okay. And these are the things that you don't want to hear.
No, I don't particularly enjoy this little speech you're making, but...
All right. So at the end of the day, you also bring out... So let's go back to media. Media brings out a lot of things in people. So we watch bad movies. Like, I'm just astounded by all the different ways that you are coming into our lives. Like, as I'm sitting here talking to you, I'm just like rhyming them off in my own head of all of the different ways that you have access to us. And I'm going to take us to break for a second. But before I go to break, what I want to say is that people need to start thinking for themselves. People need to understand that you've got this force that's around you, inside your head, that you do have the ability to overcome. You have to take responsibility for that, though. And that's the first step, is to make a decision. To make a decision not to be stuck with the devil. So we're going to go to break now and stay tuned for the next piece of the special series of A Master's Practice, Lighting Up the Devil, with me, Dr. Aisha Hogan, and the devil.
The future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
Tune in to The Practical Intuitive, Mind, Body, Spirit for the Real World, with me, host Robin Fritz, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern. I'll cover personal and business intuition, animal communication, mediumship, space clearing, past life regression, shamanic insights, energy healing, soul choice, and more, all to help you tap your own intuitive and healing skills. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Opiates has taken everything and everyone I've ever loved away from me. Everything.
I blew my ankle out and I got prescribed pain pills by my doctor.
If making my detox public is going to help somebody, I'm all for it. I just wish I would have had a warning.
Opioid dependence can happen after just 5 days. Know the truth, spread the truth. A message from Truth, the Ad Council, and ONDCP.
Welcome back to Lighting Up the Devil, a special series of a master's practice with me, Dr. Aisha Hogan, and the devil. So welcome back to listening to this. And I was reading a book. I was reading a book called Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill. And in this book, there was this list of what it means to be a drifter. And I think that it'd be really great to quote this list because people need to almost take a check mark and go like, yes, that's me, or no, that's not me, while they're listening to this. So I'm going to ask you, my queen, to read that list.
You want me to read this list?
I want you to read that list.
All right. Well, then I'll read this list. So the first thing that you might notice about a drifter is their total lack of a major purpose in life. He or she will be conspicuous by their lack of self-confidence. They will never accomplish anything requiring thought and effort. They will spend all that they earn and more too, only if he or she can get credit. He will be sick or ailing from some real or imaginary cause and calling to high heaven if he or she suffers the least bit of physical pain. They will have little or no imagination. They will lack enthusiasm and initiative to begin anything they are not forced to undertake, and they will plainly express their weakness by taking the line of least resistance whenever they can do so.
So are you agreeing with this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Lack of enthusiasm and initiative. For sure, it's easy not to begin anything, especially if one thinks they might fail.
So if a person's a drifter, there are all those things?
No, but there's some of them. And just like our discussion so far about this, sometimes, you know, parents, religious leaders, teachers are doing my work and sometimes they're not. People go in and out of walking with me, for sure. Most people, the 98%, again, are just walking with me more often.
Okay.
You want me to keep going?
Yep.
All right. He or she will be ill-tempered and lacking in control over their emotions. Their personality will be without magnetism, and it will not attract other people. Or what I like to say, it'll attract the wrong type of people. They will have opinions on everything, but accurate knowledge about nothing. They may be a jack of all trades, but good at absolutely none.
Okay, I want to talk about that for a minute. I want to stop you right there. So, the weird thing about what you're saying right now is that I know that a lot of people do a lot of reading. So when clients come in here, they're like, yes, I know that. I read that. And I'm going to have to agree with you on this point that you've just said, because a lot of people have a lot of knowledge, but they're not using that knowledge. They're not doing anything with it. They think because they know it, they're in a better place.
Well, they're arrogant.
Is it arrogance, or is it just they haven't actually executed the knowledge? They haven't made a decision to use it. So that keeps them stuck.
Yes. I think we're both saying the same
thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they remain stuck. Absolutely. You can read, you know, all day, every day, if you would like to. But putting that into practice is the difficult task. And it's easier to read and say, you know, a lot of information, therefore you must be, you know, intelligent or wise or whatever it is. But you might actually know nothing because you haven't put it into practice.
All right.
You want me to keep going?
Yep.
He or she will neglect to cooperate with those around them, even those with whom they must depend on for food and shelter. They will make the same mistake over and over again, never profiting by failure. They will be narrow-minded and intolerant on all subjects, ready to crucify those who may disagree with them. They will expect everything of others, but be willing to give little or nothing in return. They may begin many things, but will complete nothing. He or she will be loud in their condemnation of government, but will never tell you definitely how it can be improved. They will never reach decisions on anything if they can avoid it. And if they are forced to decide, they will reverse themselves at the first opportunity. They will eat too much and exercise too little. They will take a drink of liquor if someone else will pay for it. They will gamble if they can do it on the cuff, so to say. They will criticize others who are succeeding in their chosen calling. In brief, the drifter will work harder to get out of thinking than most others work in earning a good living. They will tell a lie rather than admit their ignorance on any subject. And if they work for others, they will criticize them to their backs and flatter them to their faces.
So basically, a person doesn't have to be all those things to be a drifter, but we should be mindful of these things about ourselves, that those things means that we are drifting. In the moments that we do those things, we've lost ourselves, and we need to bring ourselves back and take control again of our lives. So that's the only reason I really wanted you to read that list, is because not everybody hits every single point you got there, but they definitely have a number of them.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's go back to media. This is a big one, and that's why I'm trying to make sure we have enough time to talk about it, and we do now. So, media. This is not a tool that you always had.
No, it's developed with time, which has been hilarious and fascinating to me to watch.
So tell me how you use media.
Well, from the early stages, there would be the town crier, so to say, and they might share news or even, you know, this is bad and this is good, thereby discouraging free and independent thought, to newspapers with stories and more fear and whatnot. But today, in present day, this is where it's really taken off, and media hits absolutely everyone, which is really effective for me. Anything from a movie that encourages violence and then children are running around behaving inappropriately and having to be disciplined or this, that, or the other and bringing out emotions, to an adult spending really all of their time in front of a screen.
Okay, I mean, they've even got a new illness now, with all the time that we spend in front of the screens, called digiphrenia, which is something that I've just heard about. And that's for people who spend, I mean, our phones now, like I get that message on my phone that tells me how many hours I spent in front of my screen, in front of my phone that day. And these are hours that I could have been spending doing something else. Like for me, though, it's my work. But for other people, they're searching. They're constantly searching for what? They're searching for a sale or to talk to their friends or to, like, people don't even communicate anymore. You've created this thing where people have forgotten how to talk to each other.
Yes. It's wonderful. Why are you so surprised? It's wonderful. Have you ever been out to a restaurant? And maybe there's a few groups of friends and maybe some couples. What are they doing? They're not probably talking to each other, enthralled in conversation or having lots of laughter. Usually nowadays, they're on their phone, People lose it when there's no Wi-Fi available at a restaurant. Some will even choose a different location to have a meal because they have to be connected and on their phones all the time. They're not having independent thought on those phones. They're looking at what everyone else is doing or having or experiencing. They're not getting to know this other person in front of them or spending meaningful time creating and fostering relationships with those at the same table. They're just in their own individual world.
Okay. And yes, I've been there. I've seen it. I myself try to not bring my phone or turn it off when I go. But I've been sitting at a table where someone's sitting there on their phone while we're having dinner. So that is it's a thing. I can see, yes. And what about, like, a lot of the times I have issues with struggles with teenagers because now they have to join the working world. And all they've ever done is texted and played video games.
Yes. It's hilarious, again, for me. And yes, fascinating to watch a young adult now, because they are entering the working world, as you have said, who has played video games all their lives, who's texted even in their own home for something. It's hilarious to now have to have a conversation face to face with someone in an interview. Many just can't do it. They can't possibly think about how to have this conversation without texting it out. It's hilarious. So, maybe they get the job, but they feel insecure because they always have to be put in this situation. They're not sure how to think, how to act. It's all me.
All right. I think this the scariest thing, though, that you've come up with, and I think that, and this, actually, out of everything that you've ever done, I think this is the one thing that has, like, well, there's a lot of things that you've done that have upset me, but I think the one thing that you've done that has upset me the most, that I didn't never realized prior to the work that I do now, is these video games of people killing each other.
You're really whipped up about this.
I am whipped up about this because the one thing that I've come to understand is that our subconscious doesn't know the difference between real and fake. So when they're watching these shoot 'em up games, in their subconscious mind, it's a real thing. It's happening. And now we've got children going out and going into schools with guns.
You're right.
But what do you gain by all these children being killed? Like, what do you gain from that? One person goes to jail, or one child gets killed or put into some kind of a prison or something for killing so many.
It's not the single thing I'm after in those examples. It's what happens in the aftermath that I'm after. And that is more fear and uncertainty about how someone came to make those actions, or about how they're living their lives, about how everything about that situation is analyzed. So I don't take pleasure from something like that, but I do enjoy the aftermath.
All right. For those that are listening, I'm going to give a piece of information here right now. When you're watching movies, TV, a lot of people that come to me, because I do hypnotherapy as well, so a lot of people that come to me will say, I can't be hypnotized. And the truth of the matter is, we're in trance most of our lives, but have you ever watched a movie? You're watching a movie and there's a hospital scene, or somebody dies and you're crying. You get all whipped up about that emotion. You know it's fake. It's not real. It's a movie. But yet you're getting all wrapped up in the emotion of what's happening on the screen. That's because you're under hypnosis. That's because your subconscious doesn't know that what you're watching is unreal. It looks at it like it's a real thing. So when you're allowing your children to play these video games of killing things, their subconscious, and they get excited, right? It's like, how many points do you get? You get all these points, you go to all these levels. It's like, you know, the more you can kill, the better it is. And for the game, and you think it's a game, but the subconscious doesn't know that it's a game. The subconscious thinks that this is a real thing. So what's the difference between your child picking up a joystick and your child picking up a gun? There's not a lot of difference for them at that point. So you, parents, need to take control and be cognizant of what your child is watching, because their subconscious thinks that it's real. So part of my reason for having the devil with us today is also about not just showing you all the ways that you're being controlled. That's what the devil would like you for me to do, but also showing you how you can take responsibility for who you are. Take responsibility for your life, to step off the runaway train and take control of who you are and what you are and how powerful you actually are if you can overcome this devil. So we've gone through two episodes of finding out all the different ways that the devil is emerging in our lives, or has emerged in our lives, or shows themselves to us all the time, and how it's taking up most of our lives. So what we're going to do in the next episode is we're going to talk a lot about how we can gain control back from the devil and stand in our light. So I want to thank you today for joining me, Dr. Aisha Hogan, and the devil in Lighting Up the Devil, a special series of A Master's Practice. This show is brought to you so that you can start becoming aware of what's going on, and that many of you are not in control of your lives. So this show is brought to you so that you can regain, or for the first time, gain control of your life. Thank you for joining me. Talk to you real soon.